the studios of Radio Sai at Prashanti Nilayam. I am Chandu Vijay and you are listening to Love to Love. Last week we listened to some of the nectarine stories full of wisdom narrated by our beloved Lord, and today let us continue with more stories. And the first story is about the importance of eating right. Swami says by eating clean food we can get a clean mind, and through a clean mind we can get a clear idea of the goal. Through such a clean concept of the Atman, we will be able to get rid of the illusion of Maya. Through this method, the knot that is present in our heart will open up. And this is the basis for getting a divine vision. We should not think that the importance that is being given to the aspect of food is unnecessary. For all the type of yoga, whether it is pranayama, niyama, pratyahara, samadhi, correct type of food is the most important thing. Almost those 84 lakhs of living things that exist in this world, man alone cooks his food and eats it. All the other types of living beings take their food in the natural, uncooked form. By taking to natural food, these jivas promote their longevity, because man cooks his food before he eats. The life force that is contained in the food is partly destroyed. Bhagavad Gita has been teaching us that we should eat only sattvic food, and that too in a limited measure. There is a vast amount of air around us, and just because there is air around us, we're not consuming too much of air. We take it to the extent that is necessary for us. Now, simply because the sacred Ganges is available to us in plenty, we do not go and consume too much of the water. We take water only in limited quantity when we need it. In that manner, human beings have been consuming what is required for them. But when it comes to the question of food, why is it that we eat too much and in excessive quantities? If we eat more than what we need, we will have trouble digesting our food. Further, it will also imply that we are depriving someone else the food that he might need more than us. In this manner, we will be committing two wrongs. Also, excessive eating will promote ill health. Limited consumption of food will promote a clean and pure mind. So it is not enough just to eat good sattvic food, but we must also eat the right quantity. And with that, let's go to the first story. But before that, here is some delightful music.
Love is the answer.
Of Karnataka, a pious Brahmin who was a great scholar. Now he had an equally devout wife, always intent on worship, recitation and meditation. Now this noble man was known far and wide for his virtuous character. One day a sannyasi came to his door seeking alms. Now this made the Brahmin extremely happy. So after giving him whatever he could that day, he invited the monk to come the next day too to have dinner with him, as he was very keen to honor the ascetic with due hospitality. So the next day morning, he hung green festoons over his doors and made elaborate arrangements to welcome the holy man. But at the 11th hour, his wife fell sick and was unable to prepare the food for the honored guest and for anyone else. At this moment, a neighbor volunteered to cook the meal, and so she was brought in and introduced into the kitchen. So everything went on well and all were happy. However, there was one issue which bothered the saint. For some unknown reason, during his meal, he was drawn by an overpowering desire to steal the silver cup in which the host had placed a water. And in spite of his best efforts, the evil idea finally won him over. The sannyasi was at rest only after he hid the cup in the folds of his robe as he spoke to the Brahmin over the dinner. And after the meal, he hurriedly returned to his house lest someone discover him. Now, but that night, the saint could not get a wink of sleep. His conscience pricked him constantly. He felt
he had brought disgrace to his guru as well as to the ancient enlightened sages whom he invoked during the mantras he recited. Now he could not manage a second of rest until he ran back into the Brahmin's house the next day morning, and he fell at the feet of the host and submitted and told him that, "Please forgive me, I had stolen this article from your house yesterday," and he was crying with tears of repentance. So everyone there wondered as to how could such a good man, how could he stoop to such low levels? Then someone suggested that it might be that the person who cooked the food transmitted this fault to him through the food she prepared. And when they examined the history of the neighbor, they found she was in fact an irrepressible thief. So the tendency to steal had by subtle contact indeed affected the food she prepared. This is the reason why spiritual aspirants are advised to live only on fruits and tubers when they reach a certain stage of spiritual achievement. So, to purify the mind and the intellect for the correct reflection of the truth, the first caution is the food one intakes. And this is no trivial matter when it comes to progressing on the spiritual path.
the power to cure, flowing steady through a heart so pure. Whatever is it, he can fix for sure. I said, God's love has the power to cure. I said, the power.
We're talking about the power.
Talking about the power.
We're talking about the power.
We're talking about the power. Power so real. I said,
God's love has the power to heal.
I said, the power.
We're talking about 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 the power. You can feel. I said,
God's love has the power to heal.
Leave your mind behind. Let your spirit soar. Love is the key that will open the door. Put your faith and trust in the Lord.
Question that most of us would have is how to burn away the karma that we have accumulated over thousands of births. Most of us might be worried, how long will it take? How many more births and rebirths I have to undergo before I am cleared for liberation? Well, have no despair, for the Lord says it is not that difficult as we thought it to be, and that is the next story all about. So when once the sage Narada was proceeding to Vaikuntha, the heavenly abode of the Lord Narayana, he saw a yogi who was engaged in severe penance. The yogi prayed to Narada to bring back from Vaikuntha information about the date of his becoming entitled to enter into the Lord's abode, and Narada promised him to do so. So when Narada stood in the presence of Narayana, he pleaded on behalf of the yogi and asked that he may be informed of the date. The Lord replied, tell the yogi that he will be coming here after as many more births as there are leaves on the tree under which he is currently doing penance. Now Narada felt very sad and dispirited when he thought of the grief into which the yogi would be thrown into on hearing this disheartening verdict of the Lord. But he mustered the courage and told the yogi the news that Lord Narayana just gave him. When Narada at last broke the demoralizing decision of the Lord, contrary to his expectation, the yogi was transported into a realm of joy. He was not dispirited in the least. He jumped and danced in glee. He was lost in the thrill of his dream being so near to actual fulfillment. He became oblivious to the world around and was filled with ecstasy, thinking of the Lord and offering him his profound gratitude. The Lord was so pleased with the joy of the yogi that he himself appeared before him and offered him Vaikuntha immediately. But the yogi said it would be bad on his time to take Vaikuntha now, because if he does that, he would be falsifying the Lord's earlier word. The Lord now had to convince him that good deeds, noble thoughts and sacred feelings can wipe out the tracings of bad. Therefore, by his enthusiastic acceptance of the Lord's will, he has actually overcome the consequences of past actions. So dear listeners, listen carefully to what Swami has to say on this. Swami says, the law of karma is not an iron law. By dedication and purification, which invites divine benediction, its effect can be modified. Do not despair, do not lose heart. The flames of karma, krodha and lobha, it chars the heart. Now what quenches those flames is the grace of the Lord. Grace confers bliss, which the evil tendencies can never confer. if there is one thing that Swami always reminds us to do, it is to have an attitude for gratitude. Many times, we seldom stop to express gratitude for what we have. And when we do receive more than expected, we fail to see its true value and instead choose to waste the resource we have been provided with. Only if we can see the value in the gift of life the Lord has provided us with, this sojourn on earth becomes a walk in heaven instead of a struggle. Now here is a simple story that amplifies this truth. A Raja was out hunting in the forest. Now he spotted a deer and he was pursuing it. Now he went too far and discovered that his group had been left behind. He lost his way and was overcome with hunger and thirst. At last, he saw a tiny hut where lived a poor woodcutter with his wife who sold fuel in a distant village. Now, these people were very poor, but his wife managed to prepare a roti which the Raja ate with great relish. Now, because he had never known such taste for, he was never hungry. And he slept so soundly that noon, for he had never been so tired in his life. By the time his group arrived, they were astonished to see the Raja sleeping in the woodcutter's house. And the woodcutter was more surprised when he learned that his guest was no less a person than the monarch of the Lord. He apologized for the poor fare he had offered, though the king had never uttered a harsh word. Next day, some men came from the kingdom to take the woodcutter to the king's court, and the poor man felt certain that he was going to be punished for not taking proper care of the king. Now his wife accompanied him as she offered to share the fate of her husband. Now Raja gave him a seat in the court and insisted that he should sit. Now the woodcutter knew that this kind of a thing was usually given to animals that were about to be sacrificed. And he and his wife were fed sumptuously, and another honor which these animals get. Then the Raja asked him what boon he would ask from him. And the terrified woodcutter could only ask, saying, "Please allow me to go back my home alive with my wife. Please do not cut off my head." He cried. The Raja said, "I am not an ungrateful wretch to treat you so cruelly. Now if I give you an estate, you will ruin it, because you are not aware of agriculture. If I give you riches, thieves will carry it away, for you live alone in the jungle. Well, I am giving you sandalwood plantation in the forest, 30 acres. Make good use of it and prosper." So the woodcutter felt very relieved and he went his home happily. After about 6 months, the Raja went to the forest again for the hunt, and he remembered the woodcutter and his family, and he thought, "Let me pay them a visit." So the Raja went to the woodcutter's place and he found him quite happy, but was disappointed when the woodcutter told him that he had started selling charcoal instead of fuel. Now the sandalwood trees were being burnt and reduced to charcoal by that man because he did not know the value of the gift that he had received. So too, Swami says, man does not realize the value of the precious gift of the number of days of life he has received from the Lord. He fritters them away, acquiring ephemeral objects and fleeting pleasures that makes his life invariably a tragedy instead of a happy pilgrimage towards God.
And it's
Swami says, of these three, controlling the tongue seems to be very difficult for many of us. When we are too excited, too angry, or too agitated, it is very easy to throw words, even if we don't mean it. The power that lies in our choice of words can make a huge difference in the manner in which people around us react to it. So why is it so important to speak in a sweet and loving manner all the times? Now Swami tells us a beautiful story to depict this. One teacher, having about 10 students, was teaching them some good things. To such a place came a politician who had some position and power. Now the teacher did not go to the door and welcome and receive him and etc. So this man who had come there because he had this position and authority, he felt hurt. So he went right into the class and questioned the teacher, "Why is it you didn't care for me? You should have come and received me. What are you doing here?" So the teacher said, "I am busy teaching the children some good things." Now the agitated guest asked, "Now just because you're teaching them some good things, are you sure the hearts of these children are going to be changed and are they going to become more sacred?" So the teacher took some courage and said, "Yes, of course. There is every possibility of their minds being transformed by my teaching." So the intruder said, who was more annoyed now, he said, "No, I cannot believe it." And the teacher replied, "When you cannot believe it, it simply means that you have no faith in it. Because of that, I cannot give up teaching these boys some good things." Then this person who felt more and more hurt, he said, "There is no possibility of changing a mind merely by words." So the teacher, who was very clever, he asked one of the youngest boys to stand up. And very loudly, so that the visitor could hear, the teacher told the young boy, "Look here, my dear boy, just get hold of the neck of this visitor and throw him out of the door." Now, immediately on hearing these words, the visitor became very angry and his eyes turned red and he was about to beat the teacher. So the teacher asked, "Sir, what is the reason for your becoming so angry? We did not beat you, nor did we throw out of the class. The only thing that has excited you to this stage of anger is the words which I conveyed to the young boy. Now you are the one who said that mere words cannot change the mindset. Then how is it that the words that I uttered right now excited you so much?" So, dear listeners, it is very wrong to say that by mere words you cannot change the mind. With mere words you can cause any amount of excitement. With mere words, you can cause any amount of affection. With mere words, you can earn the grace of anyone else. So, if in this world you want to promote friendship, you can do so by using sweet words, by talking in a very sweet manner, and by speaking about sacred things. On the other hand, if you use harsh words, you are not going to promote friendship in this world.
The world is full of many things, big and small, short and tall. Beyond time is where we live, eternal no time. Such a sigh is here to say, love will take us all the way. Look at you, you radiate love and peace, ain't it great? There's only heaven, there is no hell. Love everyone, and all will go well. Help everyone that you can, it will take you to the promised land. Such a sign is here to say, love will take us all the way. So simple when you think it out, we're all the same in and out. Love is our real name when we know we win the game. When you're alone, try to see all that's true is unity. Such a sigh is here to say, love will take us all the way. Big and small, short and tall, light and heavy, we are all. Yellow, black, white, red and brown, only one heart can be found. Place of peace, where only joy is what you'll meet. Set your sight is here to say, love will.
Swami says, time is God. Now, if there is anybody who understands our love always in the right manner, it is God. But we have to be patient, for God always chooses the best time to respond to our love, as God is nothing but love. But do we try to spend time for God in our busy schedules? Let's listen to another story. There was a middle-class household in a small town where the wife was daily pleading with the husband to spend some little time in prayer and reverential worship of God. The husband refused to yield, for as he said, he had no time to spare for such pastimes which are best taken during old age, when the process of earning and spending receives a natural setback and there will be ample leisure. So the pious lady could not derive any consolation from his reply, and she could only wait for more time when praying that her advice would fall on a receptive ear. Meanwhile, the husband was affected by a serious illness and he was bedridden for a few weeks. So the doctors advised him to take some tablets thrice a day, and the wife accepted the task of administering the tablets and kept them with her. However, she did not give the husband even one tablet. The husband was very upset with her behavior. He demanded the tablets, but she was very firm in her resolve. The husband asked in anger, "Are you conspiring to kill me?" She said, "Wait, wait. Why hurry to take the medicine so soon? Let the illness become more serious. Why all this haste? Go slow, go slow. There is enough time, as you said when I wanted you to pray and do Namasmarana." So that's when the husband realized that his stand was foolish. So he mended his ways and cured himself of both the types of illness that he had, one of the body and the other of the mind.
Yeah. Humanity. Mm-hmm.
Now everyone goes through trials and tribulations in life. Sometimes we immediately blame God for the distress and difficulties we are inflicted with, failing to see the lessons and experiences that lie in each of those challenges. Now we may give up on God, but does God give up on us? Even when we respond in anger and disbelief, the loving Lord never gives us up, even if our actions speak otherwise. A beautiful story about a poor Brahmin and his wife narrates this promise. So there lived on the banks of the sacred Ganges a poor Brahmin who was an ardent student of the Bhagavad Gita. He read it every day, he worshipped the book and he tried to live according to its teachings. But his faith was sorely tried, for he was immersed in distressing poverty. He and his wife were on half ration all the time. One day, while overcome with grief at his misery, his eyes fell on the 22nd sloka of the 9th chapter, where the Lord assures that he will bear the burden of all those who take refuge in him. He felt that in his case the assurance was a hoax, and so he took a pen and, dipping it in red ink, he struck that irritating line out. Somewhat relieved of anger, he rose and went out with his bowl to seek alms. Now before long, two boys, brothers by appearance, came to his door. The younger of the two had a bluish, darker hue. He had a bag of rice and the other one had a bag of provisions. The wife was surprised because these boys insisted that all of the content of the bag was for her and her husband. She could not believe it. The woman found a bleeding gash on the back of the younger boy. She asked him who had inflicted such a cruel wound. The boy replied with a mischievous smile, "Your husband." Now, the wife was so surprised, the wife wondered how he could lose his temper so much as to stab such a charming child. But the brothers, after they gave the provisions, they disappeared in a flash. So when the husband returned home, the woman questioned him about the gash on the back of the younger boy. So the husband said he knew nothing about the bleeding boy and he pleaded innocence. Later, the husband went to his room and took the Bhagavad Gita for consolation. He opened the book and it was the 9th chapter, sloka 22. His eyes fell on the angry gash he had drawn on that page across that line. The pen had in fact cut Lord Shri Krishna's back. He wanted his faith, and his want of faith had wounded the Lord. Realizing this, he ran about like mad to discover the boy and to fall at his feet crying for mercy, but the boys could not be found anywhere. So have faith in the assurance of the Lord. When he says, "Why fear when I am here?" he means it. When he says, "I look to you when you look to me," he really looks after you and takes care of your needs.
What's in human form? is the love in my heart. The light of God is the peace in my mind. The light of God is the joy of my soul. The light of God. The light of God is the truth of my being. The light of God is the good I'm receiving. The light of God is all I am seeking. The light of God is. The light of God is.